Meet Duke Fuqua's new MBA admissions director, Sherry Ubert. Welcome to the 245th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion are to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to Admissions Straight Talk, Sherry Ubert, Associate Dean of Admissions at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. Sherry earned her BA at Dartmouth and her MBA at Harvard. She worked at several elite companies and in 2009 became Director of Recruitment for the Peace Corps. In 2012, she returned to the MBA world as Associate Dean of MBA Admissions for Georgetown McDonough. She joined Duke Fuqua as Associate Dean of Admissions in October. Sherry, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Oh, great. Thank you, Linda. So nice to be back here with you and your listeners. I appreciate the invitation.
And I appreciate your time today. I know you're just settling into a new position. Can you start by giving us an overview of Duke Fuqua's full-time MBA program for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it, and perhaps focusing on the more distinctive elements?
Sure, my pleasure. Well, you know, all of our programs at Fuqua, in particular our MBA programs, I would say excel at creating a certain type of leader, one who works exceptionally well and collaboratively. We call it Team Fuqua, and I'm sure many of your listeners are very familiar with the Team Fuqua concept here at Duke. Well, we define it as a special way of working that pulls out the strengths in others in order to work toward a common goal. So every aspect of our curriculum and program is really tailored with that in mind. For example, you know, you're required to work in teams for much of the program. Those teams are intentionally diverse because we believe strongly that you'll learn from each other. And we aren't just talking about geographical or gender diversity, but also varying industries and backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We really believe that you know, learning how to harness the power that lies in differing perspectives is really the key to leadership. I should also mention that Team Fuqua isn't just a student concept. It follows you into your career as well. And we hear stories all the time from alumni, including our most well-known famous alumni, Apple CEO Tim Cook. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to a podcast or a video that he had done recently, and he talks a lot about this notion of how he developed his own style of working collaboratively through, you know, being a student at Fuqua and how it really has greatly enhanced his career. And he really talked about the, you know, you can learn the technical skills at pretty much any university, but at Fuqua, it really taught him how to learn, how to collaborate, how to think about something, and then how to approach that something in a way that allowed him to work very collaboratively with other people. You know, another distinctive aspect of our full-time program, I would say, is from an academic perspective. It's a very rigorous program, as you would imagine, and our faculty are really constantly developing new courses to make sure students are prepared for the ever-complex, you know, and often disrupted world we live in today. For example, we were one of the first business schools to offer courses in blockchain and potential.
I'm sorry, in what? I didn't
blockchain. Blockchain, it's the whole cryptocurrency kind of fever.
Sure.
Yeah, Cam Harvey is one of our experts in that field. He's a faculty member here. In addition, just last month, we started a course in CEO activism. And what that's about is the decision-making process and complicated circumstances that leaders must face in deciding whether to speak out about a political or social issue or not, right? We feel it's really important to continually adapt to be relevant to the needs of business and students today. And then finally, I guess I would say that, you know, and one thing that I've really been impressed with coming here is that it's a very student-led culture. And our students are really constantly organizing events and conferences with high-level speakers. They lead our campus visit programs, or any of your listeners who will come to campus, you know, they'll notice it. It's very visible. Our students are really the ones that are leading those campus visit programs. They're central to our interviews. They also help, you know, help each other find ways to learn from each other. So, for example, we have a military student who started what we call Operation Blue Devil a few years ago. And the event puts students without military backgrounds through some type of training to give them a firsthand perspective of what it's like to serve. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to watch the ways that these students continue to lead efforts to teach each other. I would say another really cool example is a series that is both owned and led by students, especially our Students Government Association, called Fuqua Talks and Fuqua Listens. And the purpose is to foster a more inclusive culture. So if you can think of this, Fuqua Talks is kind of like, you know, NPR's The Moth session, where anyone can get up and share their story, their unique personal story in front of a large audience of peers and classmates. Demonstrate what makes us both unique as individuals, but also what really ties us together as human beings. Whereas Fuqua Listens really allows students to tackle some difficult subject matters in an open and transparent way that allows for differing points of view to be heard. So if the most recent session that was led by students was on athlete activism, the whole kneeling situation.
Right.
And then right when the 2017 elections happened, that was one of the first Fuqua Listens, and where, you know, students of differing political persuasions, you know, really kind of talked and listened to each other.
So is it a debate? Is there like an airing of different views, or is it just that one person airs their views?
It's usually I wouldn't call it a debate, but there's usually definitely two sides to the issue that people are talking about and defending and sharing their perspectives on. Yes.
Okay. And one of the things I noticed on the site was that Fuqua discusses a lot the concept of a consequential leader. What is a consequential leader? I mean, do you need consequential in front of leader?
What
consequential leader and a leader?
Right, exactly. Well, you know, this notion of consequential leadership really goes back to the original idea of the value of Team Fuqua. I think, though, honestly, it's really evolved more to be more synonymous with what we refer to as demonstrating collaborative leadership. So I would think of it as a leader who is of consequence is able to pull out the strengths in others in order to really get the best out of their teams, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, we believe that this is a real key to innovation as well, right? When very different people and perspectives are finding ways to solve a problem or work toward a common goal. So in other words, this isn't just a nice concept, but a winning business strategy for people who can harness the best of teams. You know, I'll give you an example of, you know, what we think of as Team Fuqua. And again, this is our version of developing these leaders of consequence, or these leaders who are very collaborative in their approach. A few years back, a research firm that we were working with interviewed some recruiters about the value of our graduates. And one of the companies told a story that I found particularly helpful. At a final stage in the interview process with this particular company, students were invited into a team interview and given a problem to solve. And students, you know, naturally tried to position the exercise in a way that highlighted their own strengths and, you know, that they were either fantastic in marketing or finance or whatever. You know, and after all this, you know, this was a job interview, so very perfectly understandable. Mm-hmm. But the recruiter shared that Fuqua students were generally different. You know, instead of pointing out their own strengths, Duke MBA started by figuring out what each of the other people participating in the exercise brought to the table. They started by building relationships and finding the best way to solve the problem collectively, which the company really absolutely loved. And I just love sharing that story because it really is a great demonstration of what we think about when you think about collaborative leadership, when you think about someone who is a leader who will be of consequence, right? And when you think about what is the value of Team Fuqua.
It seems like there's a focus on relationship building first.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And, it, you know, a lot of it stems from where we are, too, right, where we're situated, you know, being in a small town like Durham and the way in which our classes, you know, our classes are on Fridays. You know, classes are not on Wednesdays, as opposed to them not being, you know, not having class on Fridays. So that people stay here. They're very cohesive. They live in very similar places together. They work, they eat, they enjoy, they socialize. Right. So it really is able to we're able to build these very authentic relationships with each other as students.
It's interesting. My daughter gave a class on parenting yesterday. How she ended up giving it is another story. But the point that she made is that as a parent, her primary goal is having a very good relationship with her children. And that goal should guide her, and she recommends that it should guide others, obviously, in what they how they relate to their children. Doesn't mean that you have to be buddy-buddy, by the way, but a good parent-child relationship. Anyway, it just struck me because we were talking about it. Let's turn a little bit more to, you know, the goals that most MBAs have when they apply. And most of those goals are professional. Clearly, we're talking about consequential leadership, taking on leadership roles, management roles in business. But what about the entrepreneur? I know that Fuqua has a lot for entrepreneurs. Can you give me an example of something entrepreneurial and really cool that a Fuqua student or alum is currently doing?
Sure. there are definitely, like you said, a lot of examples. One that I heard about recently that I'll share, an alum, her name is Ann Steptoe. She's mm-hmm. more of a recent alum. She had a passion for healthcare and how she could use healthcare to improve and serve communities. She felt strongly that if more medical students could be exposed to the power of primary care in their communities, they would choose that route. Mm-hmm. She herself was a medical student who decided to get her MBA. So she started MedServe during her time at Fuqua, which mm-hmm. is sort of like a Teach for America for medical students.
Oh, MedServe is a
isn't it? It's a nonprofit that it's basically a nonprofit, and it sends medical students to work in medically underserved communities. It provides support to the primary care practices in these communities while also benefiting the students by allowing them to get hands-on experience and gain an understanding of why primary care is so important. And the program's been, you know, highly successful, and Ann credits many of these successes to Fuqua and her time there, including our Center for Advancement of Social Entrepreneurship, which she took, she was very much engaged in, for mentoring her to accomplish her dream and to make a difference in the lives of so many people who benefit from the care in these underserved communities. We have a number of resources. So in addition to kind of her story, you know, generally speaking, if you think about people who might be interested in either starting their own company or have a very much an entrepreneurial mindset and interest coming out of getting their MBA, we have a number of resources that do support students who want to start their own ventures in business school or who want to work for a startup coming out of business school. One, you know, a couple of these I'll just mention. We have what we call the Bullpen, which is our Duke Innovation and Entrepreneurship Center. It's a more of like an accelerator and incubator. They also partner with American Underground, which is another well-known incubator and accelerator in the downtown Durham area. We have what we call a program called Program for Entrepreneurs, or P4E, which some of your listeners may be familiar with. There's a series of curricular activities that they do. They work on their actual startup idea as part of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And they get 25% of their course credit is given for working on their actual startup, right? We also have what we call Duke Gen, which is really a network of 8,000 alumni, students, staff, and faculty who are available to help and provide resources to our MBA students who want to start up their own companies. We have what we call the Startup Challenge, and it provides about $100,000 in cash prizes for teams who have, you know, really cool startup ideas. We have a number of alumni mentors who have started their own businesses who mentor our MBAs. And then we have what we call a legal clinic with our law school students who, you know, help work with our MBAs on legal issues associated with starting up their businesses. Our Career Center also has resources to help students connect with other startups for internship and full-time opportunities. And it's interesting, you know, believe it or not, Durham and the Research Triangle Park area is a great haven for startups and entrepreneurship. And I found this really interesting. Durham has also a rich history in supporting Black-owned businesses and supporting diverse entrepreneurs as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you mentioned the opportunities for people interested in entrepreneurship. What about those interested in the more traditional MBA or certainly immediately post-MBA paths? And that means, you know, consulting, banking, product management, et cetera. Some people will be concerned that Fuqua's location in North Carolina, albeit in the heart of the Research Triangle, is far from business centers like New York City, Boston, Silicon Valley. How would you respond to those concerns?
Mm-hmm. No, yep, it's a good question. And like I mentioned, you know, let me talk a little bit about the value of being in a place like Durham. And we found that Fuqua's location is a huge bonus for our students in our community. As I mentioned, Durham's it's wonderful, you know, as I've been discovering, the food's amazing. There's great art, music, theater, mm-hmm. a really cool, eclectic community. And as I mentioned to you before our podcast, it's got very much of a hipster vibe, similar to Brooklyn or Austin. Hmm. So we've also found our full-time students bond more on the weekends because most people stay in Durham and don't scatter like they might in larger cities. And this helps them build those stronger networks and relationships that I think also will be valuable in their career aspirations and career pursuits. But what it sounds like you're really asking is, you know, will I really get a job in a big city like New York, or do most graduates stay in the Southeast? And what I can tell you is the Northeast U.S. was the number one destination among 2017 grads, and the West Coast, your home region, was the number one among 2018 interns last year.
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What were some of the companies or the leading companies?
Amazon, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Google were some of the highlights, right? I mean, Amazon, Deloitte is a big recruiter of ours, McKinsey, BCG, all the kind of MBB consulting firms recruit here. So, you know, for both classes in 2016 and 2017, the South, which, you know, North Carolina would fall into, was number three in employment within the U.S.
Really?
So I would say students, you know, also have the benefit of a strong entrepreneurial activity in the Triangle region. We do try, you know, for those students who want to kind of stay in this area, we definitely have opportunities for them. But the majority of our students, like you said, want to venture out and actually do end up finding employment outside of the Southeast. We also support them in a very structured way to organize travel to key cities during what we call weekend cities trips over the fall and the winter breaks to visit companies that are directly, you know, in the areas that they're interested in that are outside of this area. Our most recent employer report was really strong. You may have read an article in Ports and Quant with a 2017 grad's median pay being $145,000.
Yes.
And 96% of the class with jobs, you know, within 3 months out. So all these stats, you know, have increased over the prior year. So, you know, I would caution applicants, they should not be concerned about being able to achieve their career aspirations coming out of Fuqua, wherever they may be, wherever their destinations may be.
Right. No, those stats certainly are very powerful testimony to the fact that Duke Fuqua has a national, if not an international, reputation. And your answer to my last question partially at least anticipated my next one, which is recruiting is changing. There are more recruiters, more opportunities in many respects than there used to be, and many more diverse career paths. The hiring path really has splintered if you compare it to several years ago. How has Fuqua adapted to those changes?
Yep. Your assessment of the state of recruiting is right on target, Linda.
I think you told me this years ago. But anyways, at an AGAG conference, but go ahead.
Right. I would say our approach has been twofold. One is to offer employers a variety of channels that meet the diverse hiring needs and budgets and resources that they might have. And the other is to teach students skills about the job search that translate beyond just the traditional on-campus recruiting so that they can really tap into these channels and or create new channels to expand the Duke MBA brand that are more kind of networked job search focused. For instance, even within what might be considered the traditional campus recruiting, we now offer a wider variety of formats for companies, such as lunch and learn. For those companies who might want a more informal approach, we offer virtual events, including virtual interviews for employers who don't want to travel to campus. We support just-in-time recruiting needs that the companies might have by actively posting their jobs. And interestingly, those types of just-in-time job postings accounted for nearly 15% of our intern acceptances last year. We host spring events, you know, so things, you know, events outside of the normal kind of fall recruiting timeframe in San Francisco, Chicago, New York. We partner with the Duke Center for Entrepreneurship to have you know, events that are focused on students who want to work with startups in particular. So there's a number of things that we do. In terms of educating students about the core job search skills that are needed and how those are evolving, one of our required activities in the fall is for our first-year students to set up and conduct an informational interview with someone who's outside of the traditional campus recruiting kind of construct, right? An employer who's outside of that, who is not coming to campus, right? And the purpose of this exercise is to help them become more familiar with this kind of real world process and think beyond the companies that are already scheduled to recruit on campus. So we really equip our students for kind of that worst case scenario, just as standard practice, right? We are equipping our students, regardless of what their interests are, to really be able to hit the ground running, network, conduct information interviews, do the research that they really need in order to find the unique opportunities that are interesting to them, regardless of where those opportunities exist, and so that they know that they have the broader access to those opportunities.
It also seems like you're preparing them for their post-MBA job search.
That is exactly right. And even though, you know, our alums have lifelong access to our career center, you are absolutely right, right? I mean, this is the real world. This is how most people find their job.
Yeah.
And so we are training them and equipping them with the skills to be able to find that now, because, you know, they're in the microcosm. You know, the real world doesn't really exist in that all the companies come to you all the time, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, so they're well equipped to be able to do that, both their most immediate post-MBA job, but also that job that they might be looking for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line.
Okay, great. Let's turn to the application itself. We've kind of gone forward. Let's step back in the process a minute. Duke Fuqua accepted slightly less than one out of every four applicants. You're obviously winnowing down those who apply to those whom you interview. Who gets the interview invitations? And from those invited to interview, who gets accepted? How do you winnow it down?
Mm-hmm. So to determine interview invitations, every application is reviewed and discussed by the admissions committee. I think that's the first thing to really note. And we do take looking at these applications extremely seriously. Now, with that said, we are generally looking to talk to as many people as possible. We really want to be as inclusive as possible in this process and allow people to tell their story should they wish to do so, which is why we also offer an open interview period. And I really encourage mm-hmm. people to take advantage of that. It's normally the second week in September through the first or second week in October, and anyone can schedule an interview. And we give that opportunity to prospective students, applicants, in order to provide greater flexibility on their part to plan, but also to take away that uncertainty about, well, will I actually be invited or not? Well, actually, there's an open period where you can choose to say, hey, I want to interview with you. And it really allows us to hear everyone's story who would like to tell it to us. Now, with that said, there is the rest of the process is by invitation only. And so in terms of how do we make the very difficult decisions of who to admit after someone is interviewed, every application is read a second time and rediscussed in committee after the interview is conducted. And then we have to make the tough decisions, like every other admissions committee has to do, on who's the most likely to attend, but also have a positive impact on their community once they're here. And so I would mm-hmm. say, in terms of, trying to think through who might we be looking to invite to interview, we're looking at, because we're reading that file before invitations are sent out, we try and get a sense of that. And then after the interview, we double down and take a look at the entire package as a whole to get a real sense of, okay, based on stuff, based on information that they've shared with us in their application, plus a live interview, is this person, one, really excited about Fuqua? And then two, how will they contribute to the community here? Because this whole notion of Team Fuqua is so important, right? We really want to make sure that we're admitting people who really want to come to Duke. We have thousands of highly qualified applicants. And so what is it that at Duke that will really help you with your career goals? What will you contribute to our unique culture? Because we're in a small town as well, and most of our students are not from North Carolina, we look for people who will be active in the community and involved leaders. I'd also like to point out that some people have this belief that we don't admit from round three, but that's really a misnomer. We admit qualified students at every stage of the process, and so I'd encourage applicants to also submit when they feel they have the strongest application. We are looking for the same qualities no matter the round that you submit, and we absolutely have great students in our program who have been admitted in round three. So it's never too late to think about applying, even now if you haven't.
So you don't have round three just to reject people?
No. No.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Continuing to ask about
let me just caveat that I would say though, from an international perspective, we do encourage our international prospects to apply by round two, but that's not because there aren't qualified individuals in round three who are from other countries.
That's for visa reasons.
That's right. Yeah, we want to make sure that we give them the greatest chance of being getting their processing, their visa paperwork in order.
Makes sense to me. Now, Fuqua asks applicants to share 25 random things about themselves and says that new members of the admissions team are also asked to share 25 random things. What were a few of the items you shared when you joined the Fuqua admissions team?
Okay, so it was a lot of fun, I have to say. In my
it's
interview
a fun
process,
question. I mean, it's one we enjoy. Yeah.
It really is. And so when I went for my interview here, I was like, let me just create my own 25 random list. So I would say maybe people don't know that I'm actually named after Sherry Lewis of the Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop show.
Really? No, I did not know that.
So Linda, that might be something that you and I understand, but maybe your listeners, I'm sure none of them were born then. So Let's see, what else do I like? So my favorite female actor is Meryl Streep. My favorite male actor is Robert De Niro.
Okay.
I enjoy karaoke, but am tone deaf. I love Russell Sprouse and eat them at every chance. I actually grew up in a single parent household with my mom in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And she sacrificed to really put me through college, which I, you know, so appreciate. Let's see, I'm an avid spinner, and it's really been fun because I've been able to explore the different workout facilities here in Durham. I am deathly afraid of horror movies and roller coasters. If you get me on a roller coaster, you will be guaranteed that I cry.
My earliest memory is actually having a roller coaster stopped because I was howling so loudly.
Exactly, right? I am the worst. I'm probably not a great travel partner on the road, like road warrior with you, because I fall asleep in any moving object, no matter what it is, even if I've just drank a cup of coffee.
Oh, gosh.
And then I would say the last one that's kind of fun is, in theory, I could become a vegetarian because the older I get, I really crave vegetables. But in practice, I'm held back because I love pork even more. So I am in the best place ever in North Carolina because there's a pork restaurant on every corner.
Okay. All right. Now, that I think was very helpful. And obviously you got the job, so they liked the 25 things along with a whole host of other things about you. But what advice do you have for applicants preparing to respond to Duke Fuqua's essay questions?
Mm-hmm. So our essay questions are designed to really get to know you, as you can see.
Yeah.
when people are trying to fake their way through those 25 random questions, share something with us that they think that we want to hear, but it's not really, germane to them. We can really sense that, so those very kind of simple, I like ice cream, I was born in XYZ, something like that. I would say stay away from those kinds of very simple things. And look, we get it. It's hard to come up with a list of 25, but we recommend including some context around how does that particular fact drive your ability to be a better, different, or more unique Fuqua MBA. What are the insights behind the random facts that you're sharing? But also, how do these facts kind of shape who you are today? We're generally interested in going beyond just the test scores and or any single data point. And as such, we really take our essays and interviews very seriously. I mean, I have to admit, they really, Fuqua really, really pays attention to the content and the quality of the content in those essay questions because of the unique culture and how it's so important to driving outcomes and success of students here and the culture that, that gets formed here.
Mm-hmm.
Those particular questions are even more important than what you would imagine, right? And so they really, every single admissions essay is read. We're looking for people who share our belief that that business can really change the world for the better and possess both humility as well as these leadership skills to really bring out the best in each other, right? So that's, again, there's this theme that I'm sure you're starting to hear of this mm-hmm. leadership team in order to bring out the best in others, right?
Right.
And how that translates in terms of its importance in really having that transformational experience while you're in the program. But even more importantly, it translates to being a much more effective leader and individual and, human being, like when you're back out in the work world, right?
Right. I recently read a book called I think it's The Contrarian's Guide to Leadership, something like this. Contrarian was definitely in there, I think it's by Steve Sample. It's not a new book. It's been out for a while. He's a former president of USC, and we know a professor at USC who recommended it highly. And it was an interesting book. Definitely, I definitely enjoyed it. One of the points he makes is that it's the job of the leader to support the people subordinate to him or her,
mm-hmm.
To help them do their job. And I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about, but I do think that it's related.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, the more senior you become, the more you have to get things done through others. Right.
Right.
And so it really is about being able to motivate, influence, affect change through other individuals. And you do that in a way, especially with today's generation, right? In the way things have evolved in the business and organization, it's not this top-down, leadership approach. It's much more intergenerational. It's much more about collective and collaborative leadership, right? Servant mm-hmm. leaders, mm-hmm. building servant leaders. And I agree. I mean, I'm writing down the name of this book because I want to read it now. yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. you know, it's just as good to know what you're really good at and what you're not good at. And then therefore, the things that are gaps for you, you surround yourself with people who are great at those things, right? But then that's a collective mentality when you think about leadership and getting things done and adding value.
Right. What can those invited to interview at Fuqua expect?
Yes, well, very warm and welcoming experience, I would say. and more specifically, though, in the U.S., we require that you come to Fuqua on campus. And so unless you live on or close to the West Coast, the requirement is that we ask that you come to Durham. And we do that because we really believe that experiencing Team Fuqua firsthand is critical to really appreciating our culture. However, if you are on the West Coast, you can sign up for an interview with an alum in that region, and our admissions staff organize what we call interview hubs on the West Coast for those applicants at specific times as well. Now, for those who do come to campus, what they can expect really for their interview is to be interviewed by one of our many trained admissions fellows who are second-year students. So if you're kind of off campus, you tend to be interviewed by an alum. If you're on campus, you'll be interviewed, or Skype, you'll be interviewed by one of our second-year students, which is one of our admissions fellows. If you're outside of the U.S., we have international hubs as well in various countries or in geographically dispersed locations where we also identify the nearest alum to conduct your interview. And if you're really remote, then we can set up a Skype with a second-year student. In terms of the interview format, regardless of the location, there are 30 to 45 minutes. They're behavioral-based. Hmm. Nothing tricky. All the interviews, no matter where in the world they take place, are conducted in English. And although we are getting to know you and assessing fit, I always like to remind applicants that these interviews are also their opportunity to ask us questions as well. You know, so you want to make sure we too are on our toes. If you do come to campus, the interview also includes a class visit, a student or an alumni panel sometimes, especially though when they occur on our Super Saturdays. If you come during open interview period, there are also class visits that you can take advantage of. So once you register for a particular day or time and you indicate that you'd like to sit in on a class, we'll assign you to a particular class that's taking place during that day and mm-hmm. that works around your interview time frame. Outside of the open interview period, if you are invited to interview, then when you come to campus, you'll see a list of activities that are available that day, throughout the day in and around your interview. We also provide weekend dates for interviews. So like I said, we have these Super Saturday interview dates as well in case you can't get off work during the week. Right. And then for those listeners living in China this year, what we're going to do is we'll be moving our interviews in China earlier to adjust for the Spring Festival this year.
Oh, all right. A couple of questions. Are the interviews blind? In other words, do the interviewers look at the application at all, or is it just a resume?
Just a resume. Yep. Our interviews are blind.
Mm-hmm. And is there any preference? I mean, obviously you prefer that people come to Durham because that allows them to see the campus, but does the location of the interview in any way influence the outcome?
No, not only in terms of our decision to admit. Yeah. No, not at all.
Mm-mm. All right. That's a frequent concern, you know. Okay. What advice would you give to someone thinking ahead to a fall 2018 application?
Mm-hmm. You know, give yourself plenty of time. There's, often a lot of soul searching that can happen in the application process, and you don't want to feel rushed with your essays. You want to give yourself time to process and think through the best representation of who you are and why an MBA will accomplish your goals. I'd also advise making sure you build in time to visit the schools on your short list.
Sure.
You know, like I said, it's especially important at Fuqua if you can swing it, but we recognize not everyone can swing it, but if you can, it really does make a difference for your own, perspective as well. You really learn so much from being on campus and interacting with students and staff. And then another, take advantage of, any open interview seasons that these schools do offer, right? Because it's your opportunity. It's another opportunity for you to really tell your story. We begin traveling in June, so check our calendar of events on our website and meet us on the road. We really encourage you to do that. Reach out to our alumni, either alumni that you know of through your own kind of work or networks. Encourage you to do that. And then we offer really kind of unique and cool diversity weekends. So we have one for veterans, women's, LGBT, We have an underrepresented diversity workshop as well, and they allow different types of prospects to kind of experience and test out the MBA. So I would recommend that people take advantage of that should it make sense for them.
Okay. And what do you see coming down the pike for the MBA program at Fuqua?
Sure. No. I would say, I think, Dean Boulding is extremely focused on making sure that business education remains relevant. And so what you'll see is we'll continue to listen to industry about the skills they need and adapt accordingly, such as in data analytics. Our programs in big data really focus on not just finding key insights, but also applying them in particular business and communicating their value. And this was a direct result of hearing from industry about a gap in what we saw in terms of talent, who were very technically savvy, but couldn't translate the insights. We'll also continue to adapt our curriculum to focus on the current challenges facing our students as future business leaders, like the class I mentioned involving CEO activism. A professor named Aaron Chatterjee is one of the few academics who even is studying this particular effect on companies and the role of business leadership, in how it's been shifting. I would say, some of the things that are new, you didn't ask, but some of the things that are new that we're already working on in terms of innovation would be, we have a number of new certificates. We have a new certificate in data analytics in our full-time program. It's called the Management Science and Technology Management, or MSTM, short for MSTM. And the certificate really, it only requires the completion of 8 electives. It'll be the third certificate in our suite. We offer a health sector management certificate and a financial excellence certificate, so it'll be the third one.
You also have one, really, I think, energy management, don't you?
Concentration.
Yeah, concentration. Okay.
The faculty approved it really quickly. It literally allows us to shape, data analytics in all areas of business. We also have our 1 year master of quantitative management program that was new as of last year. And then, one other thing that I would say that's interesting about this new certificate program is that we're looking at it to be possibly eligible for STEM designation, which could have some visa implications for our international students who earn the certificate and then go into a STEM-related job. So we're excited about that. Also related to data analytics, we announced our first purely online program. It's called the Master of Quantitative Management in Health Analytics. And the first class will start in the fall. Being very intentional about making sure that the online delivery will still produce the same great collaborative leadership in our face-to-face programs have. So our faculty have taken, really great care in designing a program. So there'll be a small cohort of about 40 students assigned to teams of 5 or so within the cohort. There are both synchronous and asynchronous curriculum aspects. So some of the program will be completed in real time with the class and faculty and with the learning team, whereas other portions of the program can be completed independently by the student. So there's some flexibility built in.
Is there any residential component to this program?
Mm-hmm. There sure is. The program will have an in-person orientation at the very beginning, which we believe is key to establishing those relationships before students move into the online experience. And then they'll have one at the end too, with a capstone. So two different residential opportunities. But really excited to learn more about how we can, best deliver business education online and, in order to be leading that innovation again in that particular area. And then I would say
that last program is a 1 year program.
Correct. It's a 1 year Master's of Quantitative Management online program. And then we also announced some changes in our executive MBA programs aimed at both accessibility and increasing diversity. Long story short, we merged our two executive MBA programs with a global focus into one single global executive MBA program so that our cohorts will be even more diverse in their ages and stages, job stages.
Okay. I had missed that one.
Yeah. And then secondly, in terms of our weekend MBA, that meets once a month as opposed to once every 2 weeks. And so we're hoping that it provides more flexibility for working parents or people, or creates more geographic diversity in terms of people who live outside the Durham area being able to kind of get to campus.
Okay.
Or working parents.
For the weekend MBA program, is there going to be more online work associated with that? Or are you just making the one meeting longer, or?
Right. So the one meeting, so they would come in on a Thursday as opposed to a Friday. So they have more face-to-face time with each other and social time during the times that they are on campus, and then once a month. And then they, our program already infuses synchronous and asynchronous into the weekend program anyway. So there's always already kind of a virtual component that's built in. So really it's allowing for more face-to-face time for those students when they are on campus.
Wonderful. What would you have liked me to ask you? I think we've been pretty thorough, but I'm just wondering.
I know. I would say maybe, you know, one of the things that I've also been really encouraged by is our resources for international students at Fuqua, right? So one of the things
What are the resources for international students at Fuqua?
Well, you know, of course, look, you know, given everything that's happening in the hemisphere, you know, we have a genuine commitment here to diversity and a deep belief that diversity makes us stronger. And so I was really moved to see all the resources in place for from helping finance your degree to services on campus. I actually wrote a blog post recently about all the help that we provide to our international students and our daytime student blog. But in particular, you know, one of the things that's new that just came out is we have increased the no cosigner international student loan borrowing eligibility from 80% to 90%.
Wow, that's big.
We have a, go ahead.
That's big. That's important.
Yeah. We have a number of on-campus resources that support international students from our visa services. We have an international house that helps them with driver's license, social security numbers, finding housing. We connect our international families to each other. There are a number of cultural activities taking place in across Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill that we make our international students aware of. And we really have a robust set of offerings within our career management center that you know, where that really support our international students, helping them identify what are those companies that sponsor, how do they approach them, that kind of thing.
Great. Thank you so much. Sherry, I want to thank you very, very much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Duke Fuqua's MBA program?
I would say visit our website. That's probably the first and best resource. And to get all kinds of information, and then visit us on the road as well. We have a social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram. There are a number of different ways in which you know, students can access us. We really want to be very transparent and very accessible to prospects and applicants. So
okay. We'll include links in the show notes at accepted.com/245 to the Duke Fuqua MBA website. And
Great.
Yeah, for sure. As well as to related article and show notes that you know listeners may be interested in. Listener, thank you too for joining Sherry Hubert and me for our 245th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a suggestion for you. Tell your MBA applicant friends. They'll thank you, and so do I. Thanks again for coming. This is Mission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.